Tough crowd. Wow. Good-looking crowd. I am very glad to be here. I am very glad to be here. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous more than I used to love drinking. I actually love Alcoholics Anonymous more than I currently like coffee. Yeah. Great 10-minute speaker, man. Awesome. Really. And congratulations to Joe's. Joe and Joe. You know what? A year is a long time between cocktails. Let me tell you what. Boy, this whole program boils down to don't drink and be kind. It's a journey from fear to love, from being a taker to a giver. You know, but if I could have been kind and tolerant and loving and understanding on my own power, then I would have done that. And if I could have done that, I probably could have stopped drinking on my own. And then you'd have a different speaker tonight. You know, we live our way into right thinking. We alter our lives so we can alter our hearts, because it's impossible to live one way and pray another. I love going to H&I and looking at those glazed eyes and carrying a message of hope, and you just never know who's going to be there. I've seen so many winners come out of the Freedom Ranch. In fact, my buddy Frankie K., who I've now known for 22 years, came out of there, and I'm going to use one of his metaphors. I love speaking at and meetings near churches and at churches, because it reminds me of about the three workmen that have got the pile of sand and the pile of rocks and the pile of broken glass, and it's hot, and the guy comes and says, "What are you guys doing?" And one guy says, "Well, I'm just glad to have a job, you know." And the next guy says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, I got a job, and I'm making a living, and I'm feeding my family, and that's good." And he says, "The third guy, what are you doing?" He says, "Oh, man, I got a job, I'm feeding my family, but we are building a remarkably effective spiritual structure. When we're done, we're building a church where we can praise God. And you see all those broken pieces of glass? When we're done, they are going to be a big stained glass window with all the colors of the rainbow when the light comes through." And that's what we are here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody comes in here broken, different shape, different color, different size. And when we put us all together, you get this beautiful thing that's us. That's hard to define, but we know it when we see it. I know it when I feel it, when I show up at a meeting like this, when there's all that buzz outside, when people are here early, greeting each other, slapping each other on the back, talking to newcomers, talking steps, talking out problems, reasoning things out, helping each other. You know, I just love that. I know you guys got it going on here. It's a beautiful thing to be part of. To think I could have missed it. When the history of last year, centuries written, how many of the favorite developments, you know, will Alcoholics Anonymous be up there with antibiotics and take your pick, you know? Anyway, I want to thank Damien for inviting me to speak. I want to thank Larry for keeping him sober. And for caring enough about his own sobriety to dig around the men's groups of North County to find speakers to entertain all of you. I want to thank my beautiful wife, Deborah, for coming with me. Top of my resume, baby, I am still Mrs. Farrell's first husband. And I don't say that lightly, because this is a killer disease. People die, divorce, jail. You hear all kinds of stuff around here, you know. And I work with sponsees that are gone through divorces. It's always tough, you know. It's just. But you know what? It isn't just them. They all that guilt and shame, you know. It's the family disease of alcoholism that destroys our lives. But God's the only one that can put it back together. He's got the power. We don't, you know. And Deborah's here. I'm so glad she's got a program. She's here with a lot of her ALA friends who have been so precious to me. Thank you all for coming. You know what? They got Al-Anon is an awesome program. We lent them our steps. Thank you very much. We were happy to share our disease with them. So we let them use our steps, you know. We read as Bill sees it, and they read Lois remembers. And I recommend reading Lois remembers. She's a good author. She's really good. And she wrote that one of the darkest days in her and Bill's life was the day that Ebby went back to drinking. And Ebi never did manage to maintain continuous sobriety. That's not why he's not one of our founders. And Bill kind of enabled him and dragged him along. It was really tough for them, you know. I love the stories, the old stories, because there's another one. When Bill comes home about 6 months sober, and Lois is there, and she's been working at this department store, and she was high society, good life, and everything. He dragged her down. And he says, "Honey, I give up. I'm going to get a real job. I'm going to quit working with these drunks. No one's getting sober. You won't have to go to that terrible job anymore. And I'm, you know, ready." And I get choked up because my life hung in the balance of this conversation. And Lois looks at him and she says, "Bill, you're sober. And you never were before." You know, passing all understanding is the patience of wives, and families of alcoholics, without whose help many of us would be dead. I'm so glad that Ann and Lois kept Bill and Bob alive long enough to get together so we could be here. That's a beautiful thing. And let me welcome the newcomers. When we say keep coming back, we really mean it. Alcoholics Anonymous is the world's biggest gift exchange. Bring us the gift of honesty that help us remember who we were, and we exchange it immediately for the gift of hope. That's the good news. And if you have alcoholism, the good news is we have a treatment for it. The bad news is we're your new friends. And furthermore, the cat's out of the bag now. Because no one in this room ever has to take another drink again if they don't want to. The alcoholics I'm talking about. Because you've now had full disclosure. You heard an awesome 10-minute speaker. You see the steps on the wall. You got a literature commitment with books and meeting schedules, and you got us. If you leave without a sponsor, a book, and a meeting schedule, and don't try our recovery program, that's on you. And keep drinking if you want to, and come back when you're ready. We will welcome you then. No matter what. No matter what. It is always too soon to give up, and it's not too late till we're dead. And there's one more person I want to welcome tonight. Is anybody here for their last meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? I hope not, but it's a fair question because we got over 700 meetings a week in San Diego County. We are blessed. I've traveled a little bit. We are blessed with meetings. But sitting in those rooms and maybe in this room tonight are people who are saying to themselves, "I'm different. This isn't going to work for me. I'm going to have to die alone." And that is not the truth. So if anyone's feeling like that tonight, please listen and talk to me afterwards. And if you don't hear enough to want to come back to another meeting after talking to me, let's, you know, talk to Larry or talk to Gail. And please keep coming back till you hear something that resonates. You hear that language of the heart, that laughter we got. So my sobriety date is December 27th, 1990. I love my sobriety date. I don't talk about it much. I take tokens at the meetings I normally go to. But I love my sobriety date. Between me and God, that's one of the things we really got linked up. I didn't choose it. Only drunks get sober between Christmas and New Year's. It was his choosing, but I got it, and I'm keeping it. And there have been days in the last 22 years when that's been maybe one the only thing, but you know, holding me between a drink. But it's a beautiful thing. I'm so grateful for that. One day at a time. I have lived with alcoholism my whole 60 years on this planet. I didn't know it, but I have watched. I watched it. You know, my father's parents, my grandparents, you know, live and die with untreated alcoholism. I watched my father live and die with untreated alcoholism. I'm the oldest of six siblings, four of us, all in the rooms at present tense. God bless. There is room in the rooms for all of us. And I'm old enough now to see some manifestations of this disease in my children. You know, that's a tough thing. But it's also led me here. God bless that broken road that got me right to here. Every experience I've been through, my father was a good man. He was a man who went to Columbia Law School and started a firm and marched with Martin Luther King and all that. But he was also a man who succumbed to alcoholism and could not or would not see this way of life. I have a sponsor. I've worked steps with four sponsors in the last 22 years, and two of them are dead. That's a 50% mortality if you work steps with me. I call my current sponsor and say, oh, good, you're still alive. And he says, yeah, and you're not in jail because you have a cell phone. And that's enough gratitude. Both of those men that died over 30 years sober, in hospital beds the last months of their lives, and working steps with their sponsees from their deathbeds and serene. One of them we were with, old Dave Kearney, we were with him. He was in the hospital I'd worked at the time, and I would go visit him before and after, and he'd ask me how my day was. And when it was clear that there was nothing else that could be done for him, give him morphine, make him comfortable, half a dozen guys standing around the bed crying, reading the big book, his wife kissed him goodbye for what she knew would be the last time and said, you guys need a meeting. And she excused herself with her sister. And in his last moments of breath, he said, when two or more are gathered, take up a collection. You can't make this stuff up. That's a power greater than me. I have sponsees. It's so important and wonderful to have sponsees. Sometimes I feel like Bill with the 6 months and nobody getting sober. Sometimes I feel like I'm dragging them through the steps. Sometimes I feel like, you know, I'm telling them when they get a year and they're still not happy, that, man, you got a really good life. You're just the last guy to know it, you know. But I'm telling them exactly what I needed to hear. You know, my sponsor says, here, take my advice. I'm not using it. And sometimes I have fabulously successful sponsors. God's in charge of the accounting. I just do, you know, my part. And I want to thank Brad for coming with his beautiful wife. Brad's a world-class athlete, a successful businessman, accomplished sailor and all that kind of stuff. And he's sober. And he helps others. He works with others. And when my sponsor's in Texas chasing his girlfriend and exercising his Second Amendment rights, and I need to write some inventory and share it with somebody, I call up Brad and say, I'm coming over. I need you to sit down with me. I need some help. Because that's how we help each other. And not everybody's having a good day at the same time. I have two home groups because some are sicker than others. I have the Sunday night Del Mar meeting. You're welcome to come up there, 8 o'clock St. Peter's Church. And I have a Monday night men's meeting in Solana Beach. Del Mar's been open 50 years. I've been going there 22. The men's meeting's about 6 years in. And it's been so wonderful to see these young and some older men get sober over the last few years. A solution-based, no-bullshit meeting. Larry's seen it. If you want to visit sometime, it's at 8 o'clock Monday nights. I'll tell you where. I grew up in an Irish Catholic family. Drinking was normal. My father drank. Everybody drank. They took us to church. My grandmother told us the truth. We had all that spiritual stuff. But in 1968, it seemed like when my father gave up, when Martin Luther King got assassinated and then Robert Kennedy and all that, he seemed to give up the spiritual quest and just make money and drink. The rules seemed to change. So I drank for 22 years. And got to AA at the tender age of 37. My recollection, for 20 of those years, it worked. I got an education. I got a wife. I got a job. I got, you know, I just, things seemed to go sort of okay, and I managed life, if you will. But the last 2 years, I found myself in the summer of 1988 at family week at Betty Ford for my sister, who I had was asked to get a bed for. Back then, it was $5,600. They wanted a cashier's check. And at family week, they had the nerve to ask me about my drinking. I'm like, what is this? I'm here, you know. And so they said, and we don't want you to drink, you know, for the week while you're coming to these meetings, you know. I'm like, all right, fine, I won't drink. It launched me into 2 years of Chapter 3 purgatory. Taking a trip, not taking it. I didn't know that's what it was, but I am not an alcoholic. Don't you see me not drinking 30 days at a time. I am not going to drink. It was so miserable. I was so miserable. My wife would say, please have a drink. I'll get you a drink. I needed a drink. Every cell in my body needed a drink. But I didn't know what I suffered from. You know, I really didn't know. I knew about AA, but I didn't know what I suffered from. I didn't know if it was for me. And I found myself at one night when I couldn't get sober and I couldn't get drunk and I couldn't fall asleep reading my life insurance policy about the suicide exclusion. Not sane thinking. I mention that at meetings periodically because there are sometimes people in the room who've had that thought. And after 2 years of that, in the fall of 1990, I quit my big job, sold our house, dragged my wife and kids 500 miles for what I thought would be a better job that would fix me. Brought myself with me, thank you very much. And found myself underemployed, living in a dumpy rental house, drinking alone in my garage with the wife and kids there, the kids unhappy, they didn't have friends, all that stuff. I'm like, how did this happen? And the job that I thought was going to work out, the guy that was making the schedule, I was from Cal and his buddies are from Stanford and he gave them work instead of me. And I'm like, you know, I was drinking brandy, vintage brandy. I was switching from scotch to brandy every night, scotch before dinner, brandy afterwards. You know, I'm a high-bottom drunk. I still had the wine cellar, man. I had everything. But that goes to show that money doesn't cure alcoholism. And when I finally got miserable enough to go, I called my brother, who was sober at the time, and said, why don't you go to a meeting? Best advice I've ever gotten. Best advice I can give anyone. He didn't say work steps, get a sponsor, get the book, blah, 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 none of that. Just go to a meeting. Take the patient in proximity to the therapy and let God do the rest. And I walked into central office in San Jose and asked who's in charge of AA and do you have any meetings for doctors? I'm worried about my anonymity. And the lady said, well, let me take your phone number and yada, yada. And she sent me to a beginner's meeting. And on a rainy Thursday night, December 27th, 1990, I walked into a beginner's meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Los Gatos, and I heard a man take a six-month token and tell my story. And you all were laughing, and I did not know what was so funny. I hadn't laughed in a long time. See, alcohol wasn't a problem for me until I had to control and enjoy it. That's the definition of unmanageable. I'm powerless over the tide. But I don't really care whether it's high tide or low tide unless I want to go for a walk. But when I'm powerless over something I have to control, that's unmanageable. Because I could not control and enjoy my drinking. There were times I would enjoy it, and there were a few times when I would control it, and they were not the same time. And at the end, the cruelest thing was I couldn't stop drinking, and even worse, I couldn't enjoy it. Damn, man. I had nowhere to go. So I said, fine, I give up. Show me, what's the deal? Give me the homework. I don't know what this has to do with my problems, but give me the homework. And a man called me and said, I'm your temporary sponsor. This is going to be great. And he was retired from my profession, and he was exactly what I needed. You know, until one alcoholic can win the confidence of another in a few hours. And what the kindest man I've ever met. You know, first sponsor, Perry Olson, now deceased. Never heard him say a bad word about anyone. And I realized that when I walked into that meeting and came face to face with my disease and our solution, I had taken a first step. And Perry gave me a book, said, read and start writing. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this. I don't know if it'll work, but I'm going to do this. And when I read in there about control and enjoy your drinking, when I read in there alcoholic death or spiritual life, you know, when I read in there Fred's story, I'd like, wow. And I said, all right, we're going to do this. I'm going to do everything. And I realized my second step was about 5 days sober. I'm driving home and I'm humming to some song I've listened to on the, you know, in the car on the radio. And I'm feeling something I hadn't felt in years, which was hope. And a couple days later, I'm sitting with my wife in the living room. Christmas tree was still up, so it must have been early January. And she's looking at me, and she says, do you want to go to rehab? My father went to rehab, my brother, his sister. She says, you know, take time off. And I got a glimpse. Two things happened. I got a glimpse of where my drinking had brought us. Because I like to think my drinking never bothered anybody. I like to think that the bills were paid, the kids had shoes, the mortgage was paid, the wife had a car, credit cards worked. Don't bother me about my drinking. And I had the first glimpse of what my drinking had done to our family. And the second thing that happened is I took a third step. I didn't know it, but what I did was I looked her in the eyes like I'm looking now, and I said, I don't want to go to rehab, but I'll tell you what. I am going to do exactly what these people tell me to do for the next 6 months. And I did exactly what they told me to do. If they said, we're going to Denny's, where I went to Denny's. If they said, write inventory, I wrote inventory. And he said to share it, I shared it. Whatever it was they said to do, I did. Because it was obviously working for them. 10 days later, maybe I'm in a meeting. I don't have 30 days yet. They won't let you put money in the basket. Big meeting like this. Across the room, a gal sitting on a counter about the height of the literature table and falls off and is having a seizure. Some young teenage gal, I think. I'm on the far side. I'm like, I'm just going to sit here. She starts turning blue, and I'm like, all right, I got to get up. I walk over to her, roll her on her back, hold her head, support her airway, you know, till she starts breathing again. I didn't stay with her a long time, just until I knew she was going to be okay. I slick back across the room, sit down, I'm reading my book. Paramedics come, meetings, and then the meeting just gets back together. I'm watching the clock, it's about over. The secretary was a nurse, recognized me. And she says, meeting's over. We don't really have any more time for buppity-bup, but we're sure glad Tom was here. We want to thank him. And we can't wait till he gets his 30 days. And I'm like, oh, shit, Southwest Airlines. You want to get away? I did not want to. And I don't know what I was terrified about, if they were going to turn me in, call my mom. Well, my mom knew I was going to meeting. She was pretty happy, actually, about that. But what happened was people came up to me to help me. They came up to me and they said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. How can we help you? Do you have a book? Do you have a meeting schedule? Do you have a sponsor? And I said, yeah, I got a book. I got a sponsor. And from that moment on, Alcoholics Anonymous meetings have been a safe place for me. And we need to keep that. These meetings need to be a sanctuary. Maybe you've seen this month's grapevine about keeping AA safe. That's really important. Sober women go to women's meetings for 6 months. So you get a sponsor and figure this out. We need to keep these meetings safe. And I've felt comfortable at them wherever I've been, and I've been to meetings all over now. And then, less than a month, I got a job offer in San Diego, and we move again. Thank you very much. And my friend who's renting us the house we're living in calls and says, I got good news. We're going to give you a free month's rent. Bad news is you got to be out in 30 days. We're selling the house. And my wife's like, this is a little much, you know. You got to find me a house we can live in. So we're like, oh, man, how are we going to do that? I'm working, we're doing all this stuff. I find one. I think I got a deal together. I find a sober mover. All our stuff's out of the rental house in his truck parked on the street waiting to get hijacked to Mexico. I'm at work, and the realtor calls and says, we can't find the money, our life savings that was supposed to be wired from Merrill Lynch to the escrow account. You know, I don't know, somebody dropped their mop on a keyboard and hit F shift 8 and it went to Poland. Who knows? And the title company calls and says there's an easement for they built a jacuzzi and they can't find the permit. So we're not going to issue the title insurance, and so the deal's not going to go. And I'm like, oh, man, it's 5 o'clock. What am I going to do about this? I'm like, I was crawling out of my skin. 90 days sober. I needed a drink. I needed something. I went back to the hotel. You know, the kids are demolishing the furniture and driving my wife nuts. 3 young sons. And I'm like, you know what? It's Monday night. I got to go to the men's meeting. Men's meeting at Cass Street. And I go there and they're like, hey, you got 90 days, man. They gave me one of those tokens. It's still on my keychain. I'm like, the moral of that story is that no matter what's going on in my life, no matter what I think are problems today, if I apply program to them, the life shit works out. See, God has done for me what I could not do for myself, like Ebby tells Bill, but he will not do for me what I can do. He won't take me to a meeting. He won't open my book. He won't say my prayers. He won't read my Bible. He won't call you. But if I do those things that we do for each other, I can stay in touch with this power. That's what treats alcoholism. A little bit about page 66, resentments, infinitely grave, a life of futility and unhappiness. Who wants that? That's what I had. I really resented the guy that made the schedule wrong in San Jose, so I was unemployed. But you know what? Too soon to tell, baby, because I wouldn't have taken the job here. That's what I tell my sponsees, man. You know, it's so powerful to take some ink and apply it to a resentment. It says, if we permit them, you know, we squander hours that used to be worthwhile. I never thought I permitted resentments. They just came. You know. But I can sit on my patio and look at the beautiful trees that we planted years ago that turn, they're amber trees, and the leaves turn and they fall in the autumn, and I can complain about them being on the ground, wait for somebody else to do something about it. Or I'm able-bodied and I own a rake, and I can go out there and rake up the leaves, and I can do a fifth step and I can put them in the trash bin, and I can do a sixth step and carry the trash bin out to the curb on Sunday night, and I can wait for God on Monday morning to do a seventh step and send the garbage man by to pick up the leaves. The wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to kill us. Five times on that page it says infinitely grave, fatal, poison, kill. They're kind of serious about it, you know. But sometimes what I'm all upset about today is what God's using to get me where he wants to get me to. That's what's so important about having sponsees, because I'll sit with them and they're going through something so hard, and I'll be thinking, I don't say this, I'm kind. I'll be thinking, you'll be sitting with a sponsee 5 years from now, and they'll be saying da-da-da-da, and you'll say, let me tell you about my first couple of years. It wasn't so much fun when I was in it, but looking back, it was exactly what I needed. Looking back, my father did the best he could. If he knew better, he would have done better. Looking back, everything I've been through is exactly what I needed to be through to get to where I am today. Let me fast forward to the traditions a little bit. I want to talk about those. Because the tradition, I love the traditions. The traditions are what allow me to know that Alcoholics Anonymous will be here. That if I go drink again, I can come back. Now, I don't recommend that because I've seen a lot of that over the years. My brother and my sister, they're back, but it was gnarly, and not everyone gets to come back. I don't recommend people try controlled drinking anymore. I recommend they try this program for a while and then, you know, work with another and then decide. But they have such strong personal applications. And that first tradition talks about obedience to spiritual principles. Does my life actually depend upon that? 5 years sober, I'm working at the trauma center on a Saturday night. It's quiet. I'm going to go home. So I go down to the ER and look around. Hey, what's up? And the nurse says, is anything going on? I said, this guy's here. He's screaming. He says, oh, he's just drunk. I'm like, oh, great. He says, I've been stabbed. And he was drunk. And he'd been stabbed. And we took an x-ray, and his chest was all white, and the trauma surgeon put in a tube, and a liter and a half of blood came out. We worked on him for 6 hours. I poured more blood into him than you can count, bags after bags, from midnight till 6 a.m. His blood was like Kool-Aid. For the medical folks in the room, his hemoglobin was 3. I went to see him a couple days later. I said, man, God must have plans for you. I mean, what's the story? You know, I've never seen anybody bleed like that and survive. And he says to me, I'm 5 years sober at the time. He says to me, I'm an alcohol and drug counselor for Episcopal Community Services. I was sober 5 years, and I stopped going to meetings myself other than work. And I was at a party, and I decided to have a couple of drinks, and nothing bad happened. So I decided a week later to have a couple of drinks, and a couple of weeks later found himself in Balboa Park doing I don't know what with I don't know who, but he needs better friends. You know. I brought him up next day a big book and a meeting schedule. And I'm standing there 5 years sober, and I'm thinking, obedience to spiritual principles. Does my life depend on it? Tradition two is one of my favorite meditations, because if I'm in fear, if I can't match calamity with serenity, I'm not dependent upon an infinite source of power. I'm either not doing what he would have me do, or I'm not humbly relying on him. And tradition two says, ultimate authority. What part of my life is God not the ultimate authority today? I got it from here, God, you know. Thank you for the help with the drinking, but I can handle my marriage and my job and my finances and my kids and my this and my that. The parts of my life that God is not the ultimate authority turn out, coincidentally, to be the exact parts where I have fear. Surprise! Tradition three. The only requirement for membership, come on in. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. We want you to come in. But that doesn't get me sober unless I do something about it. You know, page 34, if we're going to get over drinking, we must have what? No reservations of any kind, nor any lurking notion we'll someday be immune to alcohol. Now, I got no lurking notion that I'll be immune to alcohol sometime. I drank a long time. I drank hard. I drank, if there was a way to control and enjoy it, I would have found it. Trust me. Talk to me afterwards if you don't believe me. But I have reservations. And a reservation is anything I put between God and my sobriety. A reservation is anything out there that I need to go a certain way in order for me to say I'm going to stay sober. Anything that I obsess over that becomes my higher power instead of relying on God and relying on this program and your the wisdom I find here. And I had an experience 7 years ago. My son's pot smoking got me upset. Well, yeah, actually, it got my wife upset. It affected everything for me, all four columns, my security, my self-esteem, my pocketbook, money was getting spent, he was driving cars, you know, registered in my name. Nothing, your prayer life goes to a new level when your kids are driving. Well, you got four cars, vehicles registered in your name right now, and hopefully one of them is in the parking lot, and who knows where the others are. Anyway, I'm like, and it affected my consortium because it was driving my wife crazy. I was losing my wife. And I'm going to take him to a meeting. I drive home on a Sunday after work. I'm going to get in the car. We're going to a meeting. I pull into the driveway. He's in the garage waxing his surfboard. I'm like, get in the car. We're going to a meeting, you know. I get out of the car, and I don't quite put it in park. A few of you have seen my driveway. It's a hill. And so I'm standing there now, and the car is starting to roll backwards. And I have a moment of clarity, and understand that at that moment I'm 15 years from a drink. Stone cold sober and totally insane. And I'm either going to be a trauma victim and lose my legs, and I actually know how gnarly that is, or I'm going to get out of the way and watch my car roll down the hill, across the street, if I'm lucky, into the parked car across the street or into the house behind it. And I've had enough legal experience to know how that's going to play out. Listen, when State Farm sends me a bill, I pay it before they can change their mind. And what saved me is I parked close enough to my neighbor's wall, and the corner of the driver's door started digging into the wall, and I hear that sound of crunching, bending metal. And I can jump back in and put it in park, at which point I really need a meeting. And the next day I'm driving, it's a leased Mercedes, so I'm driving to the fancy body shop with the window down and duct tape around because the door doesn't close. You know. Yeah, humility is saying grace before you're eating crow. And the lady said, you know, okay, up, and it's like, Dr. Farrell, just exactly how did this happen? You know, I'm like, I got a letter from State Farm. We decided on the review of the facts that the damage to this vehicle was based on your faulty operation. Oh, shit. My sponsor says, save the letter. You know what? That drove me to Al-Anon. That saved my life. I rearranged my priorities, and they were so helpful. And the curious thing happened. What I got from that was not just some sanity and our marriage survived and my wife get a program, but I got to reconcile with my father. Let me say something about a couple of the other traditions. Tradition 4, don't take yourself too seriously. I've already proved how a man who can laugh at himself does not run out of material. Tradition 5, each group has one primary purpose. On a personal level, what if that's my primary purpose? You know, I wake up in the morning and say my prayers, and Lord's Prayer and Third Step Prayer and Serenity Prayer, and then I get around to telling God who I think he should bless and how I think he should bless them. And I got a lot of stuff on my mind. Busy, full life, like all of us do once we get sober. What if my primary purpose, if all I really cared about was that I could stay sober and carry a message of hope to an alcoholic who's still suffering today? I'm uniquely qualified to do that. If that's all I need to do today, I got no problems. What if I lived like I couldn't fail, like God was, you know, right there with me at all times, and that's what he wanted me to do, and I can't fail if that's all I need to do today? Don't drink and be kind and be a reflection. Tradition 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility. Problems of money, property, and prestige divert us. I do not want to disclose how much of the last 22 years I have been diverted by problems of money, property, prestige, or romance. And I can tell you that money, property, and prestige and romance do not cure alcoholism. Yale or jail, park bench or park avenue, doesn't matter. My alcoholism will come and take this suit off my back that I got it in Hong Kong when I paid for my kids to go to Asia to study and we got a trip out of it. It will take the shirt off my back and return later to remove the skin. My disease wants me dead today as much as it did 20 years ago, as much as it did for my father's. Tradition 7, every A group ought to be fully self-supporting. This is an awesome group. It isn't just about the money. You do raise money and you send it, but it's about people volunteering and showing up and being a part and contributing to their own recovery and our primary purpose and how important it is to do that. But in the 12 and 12, Bill writes, everybody knows that active alcoholics scream they have no troubles money can't cure. When my head is screaming I have no trouble money can't cure, that's my active alcoholism trying to kill me. I can't just have a problem with money because I had plenty of money when I was trying to stop drinking. And in my meditations on Tradition 7, I finally figured out how much money is enough. How much money is enough so I don't have to trust God. And Carl, if I ever tell you that Tom Farrell has enough money not to trust God, please take me to a meeting. Because page 98 says, burn the idea in the conscience of any man, he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is trust God and clean house. If I get enough money where I don't have to trust God, I get to die from untreated alcoholism. AA should remain forever non-professional. You know, my work life changed dramatically. We don't, you know, charge for 12-step work. We do it willingly. But when I'm at work, I'm at work. But before I got sober, I used to, I like to think my drinking didn't interfere with my work, but I know my work got in the way of my drinking. And I just wanted to work as much as I could and save enough money so I could retire. But then I'd be like the guy on page 33 that just died in a few years and drank himself to death. I had nothing I could do. Now, I like my work, and they like me there. In fact, they like me at church when I go to church. Years ago, my wife wanted to go back to church. My sponsor says, go to church, Tommy. Go to church. Your wife wants to go, go. He says, but go to AA first and stay sober, and then they will like you there. And it says in the book, alcoholics who've derided religious people are, you know, can be benefited by such associations that being possessed of a spiritual experience, much in common, if they do not argue. And so if I go to work, I smile. One of my primary character defects is being ungrateful. So I write gratitude lists and I say thank you. And one day I'm at Vons and I'm in a hurry and I'm nice enough to want to ask my wife what to bring home on the way home and ba-ba. And it's a long line, and some lady is hammering this poor clerk for a $2 coupon, and I want to say, freaking lady, if I give you $20, will you get out of here? And I'm like, serenity prayer, serenity prayer, serenity. She finally gets done with this, and I go to this clerk, and she says, welcome to Vons, how's your day? You know, they're really trained. And I said to her, you were really good with that lady. Thank you for coming to work. And she's like, you're the first person that's thanked me all day. And I started thanking people for coming to work. Now I'm at work, and they thank me for coming to work before I can say it. They say, now it's TFCTW. We got an acronym for it. And it's like, you know what? It's stressful, but thanking people's good. Tradition 10, we have no opinion on outside issues. Bill writes in the 12 and 12, it's no special virtue that we don't fight. And I realized with my dad, I was praying for 15 years for him to get sober. There was a spiritual superiority. I wanted him to get sober. I wanted me to look good. I wanted, you know, it was about me. And what I learned through reworking steps, and Al-Anon really helped me with this, was unexpected bonus. I got to reconcile with my dad because I work in steps with a sponsor, and he says, you know, your dad had a right to make his choices. And I've never met him, but you make him look really good. God gave you the right parents to make you who he wanted you to be. And we were always very loving, you know, and he encouraged me and all that. But I got to be at peace with him and be grateful for him and got to be with him the last 5 years of his life and just be nice. Get him a meatball sandwich, watch a ball game with him. And when he died, I don't remember his last words to me, but I remember my last words to him were that God gave me the perfect father to make me exactly who he wanted me to be. And tell him that with my mother present and my son, who is his namesake. And tradition 11 is attraction, not promotion. You know what? With my sponsees, after I get to know them for a while, I bring them over to the house. I let them see my life. I let them meet my wife, my dogs, my friends. I let them see over a period of time how I work through life's problems. And Deborah threw a 60th birthday party for me a couple of months ago, and I got a gift that really touched me. Thank you, Jane. I got a pair of mugs from the Hawaiian Convention that say "Working with Others," that a really active, dearly departed member of this fellowship used to use with his sponsees sitting on the patio. And I bring my sponsees over Sunday afternoon and drink coffee with them and reread the book and go through the steps. And she gave me those mugs for my birthday, and I will use them. And thank you so much. If we don't walk this walk, we got nothing to share. Tradition 12. I got one more story for you, then it'll be good with the time, don't worry. Let's see if I can get through it without choking up. Because you know what? If we don't have anonymity, the spiritual foundation, if we don't, God bless the coffee makers and the greeters at AA meetings. Because if we can't welcome people, we got nothing here. I quit worrying years ago about who drinks or doesn't drink or how much time or how they're working their program or any of that shit. You know what? I don't care. If people want help, we help them. It isn't up to me to judge any of that. That's God's deal. It's only up to me to be part of the welcoming committee. You know, the Greeks, I've read Greek mythology, I have some Greek heritage, and the Greeks had a tradition of hospitality because they believed, they had a lot of gods, they believed their gods would show up in disguise, anonymous. And if they weren't nice to this stranger, it was the god of the ocean or the lightning or whatever, and he was going to, rain down horrible consequences on them if they weren't hospitable. Colin Ray's got a song, What If Jesus Came Back Like That, 2 months early, hooked on crack, on a flatbed car with a hobo hat, that kind of thing. So we need to welcome people here. I've got a friend that praises God and he's glad to be alive. Now, he's not an alcoholic, nope. He's just a wonderful doctor and helped thousands and thousands of patients over the years, has a beautiful wife he takes care of, some adult kids, maybe grandkids on. But he's glad to be alive. Because he's of Finnish descent, and his father, when he was young, long before he married and had kids, his father was in the Finnish ski patrol fighting the Russians. 1939, 2 million Russian troops invade Finland, take 200,000 casualties. Before World War II, we don't read about it much. Fought off by 200,000 Finnish soldiers and ski patrols. Now, bear with me a minute. We like to go skiing. We like to go to the mountains. And we hop in our Chevy truck, and we got our speaker tapes, and we got our coffee, and we stop to go to the bathroom and have a burger. And then when we get there, we stay at the Best Western and, go in the jacuzzi. And when we're on the slopes, we got, warm clothing and sunscreen, and almost everything's covered. And a couple hours, we'd stop for a latte, That's our mountain experience, And then I know where the meetings are at night, There's one Al-Anon meeting a week in Mammoth, and there's plenty of AA. That's our mountain experience. This wasn't like that. Fighting the Russians on skis by the Arctic Circle. My friend's father got shot in the chest, bleeding to death in his chest, kind of like my five-year guy. They dragged him back, and he survived that injury. Amazing that he'd survive it. More amazing that they dragged him with them. Think about it. If you're being chased by the Russian army and you're dragging a wounded and they catch up to you, they kill everybody. They leave him there. He's suffering, or the Russians get to him when he's alive. They torture him, find out where everybody is, and kill everybody. Amazing they didn't shoot him, put him out of his misery, and reduce the threat. I tell that story because in Alcoholics Anonymous, we do not shoot our wounded. No. We welcome them, give them coffee, and drag them along until they get well enough to help others. That's what we do here. It's been a real privilege and pleasure to share a little bit of my journey that's happened since I started letting God write the story. Don't drink and be kind. Thank you.